Citizen Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Virginia.
My name is Noah.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today on the Prison Radio Show, we'll be hearing another interview from The Final Straw, this time with Imam Siddique Abdullah Hassan, who's currently incarcerated in Ohio. Hassan talks to Bursts about the current wave of organizing inside prisons in the U.S. We will also have a live in-studio interview with Dr. Vicky Chartrand, who will be talking to us about the Prison Letters Project.
So we'll start the show today with the interview with Imam Siddique Abdullah Hassan. This interview originally aired on the Final Straw Radio, and it's been edited for the Prison Radio Show.
Hey, listeners, be forewarned that because of poor connection to the prison, the sound quality will shift greatly during this conversation, yet another reason to abolish them. I'm speaking with Imam Siddique Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on death row in the Ohio State Prison in Youngstown. Hassan was an organizer who helped to bring the relatively peaceful resolution of the Lucasville prison uprising in 1993 and is currently an organizer with a newly formed Free Ohio Movement to End Me. Thanks a lot for speaking, Hassan.
We've spoken on the show with members of the Free Alabama Movement and the Free Mississippi Movement in the past, and now I hear there's a Free Ohio Movement. Hassan, can you tell listeners about the Free Ohio Movement, about its goals and its methods?
Okay, the Free Ohio Movement was just recently established with people, family, friends, and supporters on the outside in coordination with a few prisoners on the inside. And the movement is constantly growing. Yes.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
All around the country, you're having people that are putting together are becoming part of the freedom movement. And like you said, you have the Free Alabama Movement, the Free Mississippi Movement, the Free Virginia Movement, the Free Georgia Movement, the Free Illinois Movement, and the movement is constantly growing. And basically what is happening is that many corporations are exploiting or taking advantage of prison, cheap, or free labor. And there are many other problems that's going on behind enemy lines, and have reached a breaking point where prisoners, as well as their family members, are tired of being exploited and taken advantage of, again, by corporate America and by prison officials. So as a result, we're coming together and trying to figure out the most best and economical way of trying to eradicate the various different problems that is going on behind enemy lines. And that is the reason for why the movement is actually has been created. But if you take, for example, like in Ohio for the last 40 years, prisoners been getting the same state pay, that is the amount of money that they pay prisoners for their labor. And state pay has been the same. It has never actually went up. However, the prices keep going up. And a lot of time when the prices go up, it goes up sometime as a result of the oil prices going up. And that's what the prison authority, the commissary, with people would tell us. The reason the prices are going up in the inmate commissary is because gas has went up, inflation has been going up, but yet and still, when the gas prices drop, like they have dropped tremendously as of recent, the prices never goes back down. And the amount of money the prisoner gives is anywhere from 11 cent to like 17 to 22 cent per hour in the state of Ohio, and that's primarily the same in various different places in the country. In fact, when I was in the Georgia penal system in the 70s and early 80s, prisoners there didn't get paid anything for their labor. In fact, that is still the situation down there now. They still are not paid, and it's not just in Georgia. There are a few other states, primarily in the southern states, where prisoners actually get paid anything for their labor, and the prison authorities feel that it's all fair game because, and they have the law on their side based upon the 13 amendments to the Constitution.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
The 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which legalizes or permits a slavery and involuntary servitude for those who have been duly committed, convicted of committing a crime. So that is what's going on. But there's a host of problems. I just narrated one of them. That's in a nutshell, that's basically what's going on in the state of Ohio and around the country.
Yeah, so can you, for people that aren't on the inside and never have been, or maybe aren't close to someone who is, can you talk about the costs, like, in terms of prisoners having to pay for maybe occasionally programs or access to communication, like phone calls or food or, you know, the sort of, like, what kind of costs are there to the day-to-day living inside a prison that prisoners actually have to pay for?
Okay. Not only are the commissary prices high, prisoners also are given the opportunity to purchase of what family members, well, prisoners can either purchase from their money that family members send them or that they earn, or in most cases, family members order them food boxes, or what they call sundry boxes. And this can be ordered from places like Access, Union Supply, Walking Horse, or some of the other companies that have contracts with these prisoners. And these prices are very high. And you would think that because the prison authorities are dealing business with these companies, that they would be getting wholesale prices, because the more that you purchase, seem like the prices should actually be reduced. But no, the prices are actually the same. So prisoners have to pay exorbitant prices for commissary items, as well as the items that they pay from these companies. You're talking about shoes, pajamas, undergarments, watches, fans, alarm clocks, and the list goes on and on and on. And this is the same with regards to female prisoners. So we have to pay for that. And it was just as a recent development, let's see, it just been over 1 year ago. I remember the exact date. Let me see, April, May. It was exactly 1 year ago. We was here on a hunger strike, and during the time that we was on a hunger strike, I know the FCC stepped in and told the state of Ohio, and actually told everyone in the country that they cannot exceed, let's say, close to $5 per call. Because here in Ohio, for me to call from where I'm at right now, I'm in Ohio state-of-the-art supermax prison, which is called Ohio State Penitentiary, which is in Youngstown, Ohio. For me to call from Youngstown to Cleveland, which is like Cleveland, Ohio, which is like only an hour away, you would have to pay $5 for a 15-minute phone call. And that would be anyway in the state of Ohio, Cincinnati, Columbus, Akron, Ohio. It would be $5 for a 15-minute phone call. Now, if you was calling out of the state to Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, or anyway out of the state, you would have to pay anyway from $15 to $24 for a 15-minute phone call. And basically what was happening was the prison authorities was getting anyway from $15 to $20 million per year as kickback or as commissions as a result of them allowing Globaltel Link to exploit their prisoners. But finally, like I said, the FCC stepped in, and as it is now for the state of Ohio, for in-state call anyway within the state of Ohio, it's only 80 cents per call for a 15-minute phone call, and out of state, it would only be 95 cents per call. So that is a tremendous difference. But nevertheless, it does not eradicate or erase the fact that for many, many years and decades, prisoners in the state of Ohio was always being exploited. And other states, they do not have the 80 cent and 95 cent per call. You know, some states are pushing it to the limit. If the thing says you cannot go over $4.70 per call, they at $4.69. Trying to get every penny they can out of prisoners. So this is the type of exploitation, economic exploitation that prisoners and their family have to experience. And what is really amazing about this, or mind-boggling, if I may use that expression, is that statistics shows that when prisoners have communication with their family, friends, loved ones, and supporters on the outside, that the recidivism rate is actually cut in half. So you would think that that is what the prison authorities want, because here in Ohio, they have the name Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. But the word rehabilitation is actually a myth. It is only for public consumption. Because if you was really trying to rehabilitate prisoners and once they be released back out of society, you would hope and pray that these prisoners would be a credit or an access to the community in which they come from. But when you were charging prisoners those exorbitant rates for phone calls, and there used to be a time in Ohio that they would give every prisoner in the state of Ohio, they was eligible to receive a free state letter per week. But now you only get one state letter per month. So when you look at the fact of how all these commissary prices are expensive, when the closed talk boxes and food boxes they purchase from private vendors that have contract with the state of Ohio are very expensive, when you look at the fact that their phone calls used to be expensive, and the fact that they have did away with giving prisoner one state free letter per week, now it's on one per month, it tells you that they're not trying to accommodate prisoners and trying to maintain that relationship or that closeness with their family and other supporters on the outside. So it's really it's like a catch-22. You know, they say one thing for public consumption and they put one thing on paper, but when it comes to putting it into practical application, it's a whole different ballgame. That's the easiest way to put it.
It seems to me like one of the really important and powerful things that I've been seeing out of the free movements is the connection between family and community and faith communities and political communities on the outside, reconnecting with folks on the inside and sort of speaking over or through the prison walls and organizing on the inside and the outside. You know what I mean? Can you talk about that, what that looks like in Ohio?
Okay. Again, we just recently started the Free Ohio Movement, where we are reaching out to family, friends, loved ones, and supporters on the outside. And that's a very good positive step. I'm aware of what you're talking about because I do a lot of reading, and I'm aware of the family, friends, and people in Alabama and other states that are actually working, and they are reaching out and extending their hands to prisoners. And that is a very good sign, because what seemed just like yesterday, not literally but figuratively speaking, is just yesterday, a lot of people in society, they was like, how do I put it without sounding offensive? It seemed like they was detached and desensitized.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
It seems that the people in society was detached and desensitized toward prisoner struggles. They was going through their own struggles. And not only that, it didn't help by mainstream media always trying to demonize prisoners, trying to put prisoners in a position as being some of the most low-down, psychological, and depressed human beings in the world, and to try to make them lose their worth. We are still human beings. And as I always try to emphasize to people, that we are prisoners, we might be prisoners, and some of us have made mistakes. Some of us are actually in prison because we did not commit a crime. We are actually innocent. But yet and still, we have the same tools, the same potentials, and the same humanity, and the same capacity for development that any other human being actually has. So the mere fact that people out in society are extending an olive branch, are extending their hands to those of us behind enemy lines, it's amazing. It's really mind-boggling. But it's long overdue, because what people in society have to understand, if the same government that is oppressing us behind enemy lines, it is the same government in corporate America that is oppressing them out there in society. If we could just take one thing, for example, just look at the labor. We're talking about prison labor, cheap prison labor. There's a thing that's called outsourcing, where you have corporations, what they do, they try to evade taxes. They don't want to pay American workers the minimum wages or livable wages, which is $15, which most people in society are asking for now. So instead of paying them what American citizens should be given to work types of certain types of jobs, what these corporations do, they do outsourcing. They send their business over to Bangladesh, Vietnam, China, because they can get cheap and free cheap labor, and it saves them money as far as taxes is concerned. Well, when we turn that around and look at what's going on behind enemy lines within this country, you have the same thing that's going on. Because remember, again, it's the same government that is oppressing both of us. Take, for example, out in California, you have anyway from 3,800 to 4,000 firefighters who fight wildfires. And these blades can get up to 100 feet long, 100 feet high, excuse me. And these prisoners put their lives on the line to out these fires. They're trying to do a service to their community. Not on that, most of them, they're actually doing it because they, for every day you work, you get a day off for good performance and behavior. You get 2 days off. So, and prisoners are trying to regain their right for freedom back into society so they can spend time with their family, friends, and loved ones. And this is actually what's going on. But corporations are doing outsourcing, they're doing insourcing. And when it comes to insourcing, it is prisoners just doing the free or cheap labor to benefit the rich and famous or these powerful corporations.
An interesting thing that's come up over the last few years has been the Industrial Workers of the World, or the IWW, as a labor union trying to organize with prisoners through this new creation they have called the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. And I know that has been announced to have been a useful tool for prisoners in Texas during the recent work stoppages in the month of April. Is there much in the nascent form of the Free Ohio Movement? Have you seen much engagement with the IWOC or the IWW or other labor unions around issues of unpaid or underpaid labor?
Yes and no. Again, I want to emphasize that the Free Ohio Movement is a recent movement, and we are patterning ourselves off of the other movements because we are one in the same. We're just in various different states. But yes, we do have communication with the Workers Organizing Committee in New York, as well as in Missouri, and we are working with them, and they're being very supportive and helping us to trying to change the quality of life for prisoners. Because I firmly believe that if the quality of life was better for prisoners, prisoners would actually be better people. If you treat a person as a dog or animal, then obviously they're going to respond as such, because there's a thing called conditional response. You put people in a position where they will respond a certain way. And the way you treat people, you are actually inducing prisoners to actually fail when they get back out in society. And it's called job security. The more people that keep coming back to prisoners, the more prison authorities and prison officials they're going to have jobs. So when you look at what's going on, I guess you can call it the recession-proof industry. That's what the prison industrial complex should be called. Again, the recession-proof industry, because it's never going away unless we take a stance and try to bring about true revolutionary changes.
We are speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, one of the Lucasville Five prisoners and an organizer of the newly formed Free Ohio Movement. The FOM, modeled on the Free Alabama Movement, is joining across states to organize prisoners against foul conditions, poor food quality, unpaid and barely paid labor, lack of access to family and loved ones on the outside, high costs of incarceration, and more.
So the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising approaches on September 9th as a significant date for this growing anti-prison movement. Can you talk about what's being called for and how prisoners view the tragedy of Attica in this light?
That's a very touching situation. Attica, it has a significance in almost all prisoner lives. The ones lives that may not have a significance are those prisoners who are not conscious. But for those of us who are conscious, for those of us who are revolutionaries, who are trying to bring about positive and meaningful change, for those of us behind enemy lines, it has a significance in our lives. And yes, this September the 9th, which would be the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising, where prisoners came on and demanded that they be treated as human beings, that they be treated as men, that they were fed up with the gross miscarriages of injustice. In the lives of true revolutionaries, I'm not talking about armchair revolutionaries, there are many people who theorize about revolution, about significant change, positive change, without the benefit of actually being engaged in a revolutionary movement. But for those of us who have some skin in the game, who have put our lives on the lines to try to bring about positive change behind enemy lines, we understand the significance of that date. And I noticed from the last 4 years, various different groups put aside one day, a 24-hour period to fast, to not be engaged in hostilities among various different factions and various different groups, and to spend that time educating themselves of being engaged in positive activities. That one has been going on for 4 years. But it has reached the point now where prisoners are basically saying enough is enough. The reason that prisoners are given these extended sentences that they're actually given is because of their free labor. The reason that they're being treated is because corporations are actually benefiting from their labor and the government is actually benefiting from it too. So as a result, people have tried writing informal complaints. They have tried writing grievances to the prison authorities, and when they have been denied or the problem hasn't been resolved to their satisfaction, they have filed a complaint to the chief inspector, which is in the capital of their respective states, and they still have not gotten the matter resolved. People have been on hunger strike. People have destroyed and vandalized state property. People have did almost everything. They have did almost everything except throwing the kitchen sink. So it has reached the point now where prisoners say, what is the most effective way that we can stop this economic exploitation, this income inequality as it relates to prisoners behind enemy, people behind enemy lines? And the question is, we hit them actually where it hurt. So there has been a call for September the 9th, the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising, that prisoners are saying basically, we're not talking about for a 24-hour period. Prisoners are talking about laying down and refusing to work, refusing to participate, of refusing to contribute it to their own exploitation, to their own tyranny. And God willing, we would actually succeed.
So for folks that are on the outside who might want to participate or somehow offer support to folks that are organizing inside the prison walls, what would you suggest? How would you suggest they get involved?
First, I would perhaps suggest they go to the freealabamamovement.com. They should also go to the website supportprisonerresistance.org. And I can't remember by heart the IWOC website.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Don't know by heart the IWOC website by heart, But if they go to the two websites that I just narrated it, I'm sure there will be a link to the other website. So that's one of the things they can do, is keep up-to-date information as to what's going on, what's being developed. But another thing they can actually do is extend a hand to prisoners and help prisoners and their family and friends and supporters on outside to help get the message out. One of the ways that can be done is trying to make arrangements for prisoners to call in on radio programs that would host them and get a better understanding about what's going on behind enemy lines and what corporate America and prison authorities are doing to exploit prisoners and not being geared toward rehabilitating them. Because the more programs that we actually speak on, prisoners can get, people in society can get a better understanding of how people in America is actually being exploited, citizens of this country. Another way, if they can talk to people in print publication who are willing to interview prisoners over the phone and talk to them, talking to their family so they can get a clear understanding about what's going on, those things will actually be helpful. And then the company that they have chosen to boycott, we ask some people on outsides to boycott McDonald's. We ask some corporations and colleges, campuses, universities to divest in corporations that feed on prison laborers. So these are some of the things that people can actually do. So in due time, there would be flyers and information being circulated with regards to McDonald's, how they are actually exploiting people and this economic exploitation phenomenon that's going on rampant throughout this country. And once they get this information, a date will be chosen for those on the outside where they can go to certain prisons within a state. So we're saying this. We're not saying that prisoners should be let loose. We're saying the quality of life should change. Prisoners should be able to make some decent pay so they can send that money to their family, friends on the outside. They can help take care of their children. Because even when they get out of prison, they are faced with the embarrassing situation of paying for restitution. Hell, they've been working for someone free all throughout their incarceration. If they was being paid minimum wages or what they're supposed to be paying, they can pay the restitution of the court costs that they actually owe. So if you let a person out of prison, give him an outfit to wear and a small check for $75, anyway from $35 to $75, what a person going to do with $35 to $75? But if he or she was being paid for their labor, then they can take that money and pay off the restitution or court costs they owe. They can pay their child support, and they can actually send money home to be of assistance to their family. But that's not what the prison authority want. It's nothing but greed, more greed, and excessive greed. And again, basically what it has come to a head where prisoners, their families, and others are saying enough is enough. The same government that oppressing those guys and gals behind enemy lines, it is the same government that oppressing us out in society. Let's join forces and let's deal with this beast once and for all, where the quality of life would not just be beneficial to the 1% of the rich people in this country who control over 40% of the wealth. Let's establish true income equality in this country. As Bernie Sanders would say, it's time for a political revolution, and God willing, that is what is forthcoming.
We've been speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on death row in Ohio State Prison in Youngstown. Check out supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org to keep up on developments towards and beyond the September 9th nationwide prisoner strike.
That was an interview with Imam Siddiqui Abdullah Hassan. The interview originally aired on the Final Straw Radio, and we edit it for the Prison Radio Show. To listen to the entire interview, visit thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. The time's presently 11:30, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
Making Space Montreal, a group of local musicians and activists devoted to exploring intersectional issues of marginalization, is proud to present our first panel discussion. Entitled Making Space, Reflecting on the Limits of Our Scenes, this panel explores how musicians of color in the Mile End Anglophone scene experience racism and what allies can do to help. Our goal is to initiate a conversation that is long overdue. We invite you to be part of this discussion on June 5th, 3 p.m. at Bar La Ritz. Audience members can also submit questions for the panel beforehand. More information is available at Facebook/MakingSpaceMontreal.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Next up is an interview with Dr. Vicky Chartrand. Dr. Chartrand is assistant professor in the sociology department at Bishop's University. Her general research interests include penality, colonialism, grassroots justice, and collaborative methodologies. She also has over 15 years' experience working in the anti-violence field in the nonprofit, government, and voluntary sectors. This includes advocating for and with women and children, indigenous communities, and prisoners. She is the founding member of Prison Letters, a group of students and academics who support prisoners across Canada by responding to information and resource requests. Hi, Vicky. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here and on Mohawk territory as well.
Do you want to start and talk a bit about what is Prison Letters?
Well, it's exactly as you say, and as the name sort of outlines. We have prisoners from federal prisons across Canada who write us. They do information requests. We actually also get some prisoners writing from the U.S. as well, but given our limited resources, we direct them to the Prisoner Resource Center in the U.S. that offer all the resources that are across the states. So we get about 100 letters a year, and mostly of our volunteers come from Bishop's University, but we also have some from the University of Ottawa, and if any McGill students are interested in volunteering, we'd be happy to have you guys as well.
When did the program get started?
So it's fairly new. We just started it about 2012 at the University of Ottawa, then eventually we moved it over to Bishop's. The idea actually originally came from in the 1990s, there was a program operating from the federal NDP Justice Critics Office, and students would do their field placement there, and they would respond to prisoners' concerns that were going on in the prison, and sort of gave the justice critic a sense of some of the problems or issues that were going on in the penitentiary system across Canada. So I got the idea originally from that, and then throughout my researches, I came across a group in BC, and they're based in Simon Fraser University, and they're called Letters for the Inside. And they do something very similar. They mainly had focused originally on one institution in BC, and they expanded out to Canada. So it's actually really good to see that all these kinds of resources are emerging for prisoners.
Mm-hmm. Is the NDP Justice Critic still a thing, or it doesn't really exist anymore?
Good question. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that that program folded quite some time ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are examples of requests that the project gets? What kind of letters do you get from folks inside? What kind of resources are they requesting?
It's a real big range. You can get some things that might seem a little trivial, like we had a request for a picture of the logo of the Wendy's logo, the Wendy's restaurant logo. You get other requests like a list of books that are available on alternative healing modalities. And then, of course, you get requests around resources, the cost of living in Edmonton, what sort of community services are available in certain areas. A big one that we actually get are education requests. As you know, most prisoners don't have access to the internet, so why we're doing this work to begin with. And so they can't take print-based, or they can't take correspondence courses, which most of them are available online. So we started to look into universities across the country that would offer print-based courses, so they could actually upgrade from just their regular GED. Other things is like research on dangerous offender designations, human rights requests. We get a lot of that. Sometimes prisons are actually supposed to provide the commissioner's directives, which is the sort of procedures of how prisons are supposed to operate. But by law, they're supposed to be provided, but sometimes they're not, so we'll provide them with the commissioner's directives. So it really is a fairly broad range. One of the big things we do is that we don't offer legal or business advice, and we don't act as pen pals, but we can provide information on groups that do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's involved in the project? Both maybe if you have a sense of the kind of folks inside who are sending you requests, are they coming from federal or provincial prisons? And
yeah, it really is all federal. There's so much transience in the provincial prisons, and then we're also operating off of fairly limited resources ourselves. So it mostly is federal, and we've gotten literally mostly from the men in prison, some from some of the women. But it, across the board, like from coast to coast, we've gotten letters from everywhere. And then we get our regulars too, and they write in regularly, let us know, keep us informed of what's going on in the prisons.
Mm-hmm. And you said that there's students in Ottawa who are involved as well. Is it that like most of the letters arrive in Sherbrooke and then some of them get sent to Ottawa, or how are folks in Ottawa involved?
Oh, so we had originally started, I was at the University of Ottawa, and we originally started the group there, and then it just became easier to move it to Bishop's as I moved to the university out in Sherbrooke, Quebec. So we still have some volunteers who stayed on from the University of Ottawa. We have about 70 volunteers, and then of those 70, there's at any given time about 15 to 20 who are actively taking on letters and helping out with fundraisers and events.
Okay, cool. My next question is, what are the advantages and disadvantages of doing this project in a university context?
Well, as a researcher, part of my work is collaborative, what I call collaborative methodologies, not to bore the hell out of everyone, but part of it is to recognize that the university is a tremendous wealth of resource, right? You have libraries and learning commons and networking and conferences and access to skills and tools of learning. So it's a wealth of information. So it's one of the best, I think one of the best places is to have it is a university setting. Mm. Having said that, I think it's important that we understand this program is really about co-sharing and co-production of knowledge. It's not just a bunch of students getting together helping prisoners per se. We understand and we learn a lot from the prisoners themselves and the material reality or the material conditions of the prisons. So it's mutually beneficial, and I think the students understand that as well. They gain as much as the prisoners do from us providing them with any type of information. And then the other thing that's good about the university is, given that it's, you know, it's volunteer work, we have a lot of latitude, so we can send in things, not controversial, but, you know, we can look at advocating and sending in materials that will help individuals in advocating for their rights. So, for instance, we'll send in materials on human rights, or we'll send in materials on how to access information and help them and support them through that process. Whereas I think if you're funded through, say, the government and the like, what often happens is you're bound by a lot of conditions of that funding. So you may not be as at liberty to be able to do the type of advocating you might want to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about the challenges and rewards of being both a direct support and an advocacy project?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about I don't think you can do one without the other. If you're going to support, you really have to do advocacy, because you're starting to address the conditions that lead to that need for support. And the prison environment, it's, you know, I started doing this kind of work, advocating about 20 years ago. I started going into a prison in Kingston, and I did that for 5 years with men sentenced to life in prison. And they're obviously, if they're there for life, they're there for murder. So they're in for fairly serious offenses. And while I think accountability is really important. I do. At the same time, when I spent that time in the prison, I started to realize that it's such a brutalizing environment. And I don't think that if you take someone from their community, from their supports and their loved ones, and put them to an environment that's brutalizing, and then think that they're somehow going to come on top, I think that's the fallacy that we have of prisons, this belief that it's somehow going to change people, make them better. I think people become better in spite of prisons, not because of prisons. Sorry, I lost a bit of track to your initial question. But, the advocacy. So then again, going back to that question, is that, so you have to start to look at and address the problems that are going on, and primarily the problem is actually, I think, prisons. So you have to advocate as well as support. One of the things, though, because we do get a lot of letters, and we do this on the side of our desks pretty much, is that we can't advocate for each letter we get. So what we try to do is provide prisoners with some of the resources so they can advocate for themselves, so they can become self-advocates or advocate for other prisoners. So for instance, someone, he's been doing some jailhouse, he's a jailhouse, what you'd refer to as a jailhouse lawyer, and he asked us about getting him a criminal code. Now, you'd be surprised, but we can't send in books. We're not allowed to. So what I did was I gave them information on groups that, like Books to Prisoners, that it can act, that go through the library, the prison library, in order for him to get that book. So that way he can access a criminal code so that he can look at the laws and regulations around people's convictions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this a little bit earlier, that your resources are limited as a project. How do folks inside find out about you guys? What kind of outreach have you done over the years that have made you known in different prisons?
Prison's a small community, and so word of mouth goes really far. And so we are a professional service. We offer a professional service, and I think that's really important. So in the sense that we respond to every request, we treat every request seriously, and we treat individuals as with dignity and respect. And so word of mouth goes pretty far. And the other thing is, we actually do a mail out every year to every prison across Canada. And so we want to make sure that it gets hit. There's about 50-some prisons across Canada right now, federal prisons anyway. So we do a mail out every year. We give them a resource directory. So it's a package we put together of the different national organizations that support prisoners. And we all, the other things that we do is we hold public education events just to raise awareness around the issues as well.
When you're sending those resource packets inside, can I ask, are you sending them to the inmates committees or to folks at the library inside? Like, who do you send them to?
That's a good question. Yeah, so we address them to the inmate committee. I know that some of them aren't getting the packages, because we hear this through kites from other prisoners. And sometimes some prisons are a lot more strict than others. I'll give you an example. We were sending in Christmas cards every year. We send in Christmas cards to anyone who's written us. And as kind of something fun, I put some sparkles in the card, just, you know, although that might not be so fun for some people. Anyway, what happened was some of the prisons sent back the Christmas cards because sparkles are considered contraband, which is unfortunate. So, you know, and when you're in prison and you spend a lot of time by yourself, getting a Christmas card can make all the difference in the world, right?
So my last question is, how can folks on the inside get in touch with Prison Letters?
Yeah, for sure. So it's fairly simple. We actually have a website, and all our information is there, and it's prisonletters.info. So once again, that's prisonletters.info. Yeah.
Do you know a mailing address that folks inside might be able to write to if they wanted to get in touch with
you guys? Oh, yeah, sorry, if people on the inside are listening, it's at Bishop's University, and it's 2600 College Street, Sherbrooke, Quebec, J1M1Z7.
Cool. Is there anything I missed or things you wanted to add? Or
I just want to say a big thanks to the men and women on the inside. And something that I wanted to let the people know is that we had an event not too long ago. We've been doing some work around the missing and murdered Indigenous women. And so we had a fundraiser for a group called Tears for Justice, who do national walks across the country to raise awareness. And we did this is also around the Harper administration, when they were refusing to do an inquiry into the deaths and murders or disappearances. And we did a call out to the prisoners to donate prisoner art for this cause and this fundraiser, and the response was absolutely overwhelming. And I just want to say, I send incredible gratitude to everyone on the inside for their generosity.
Cool. We've been talking with Dr. Vicky Chartrand. Vicky's an assistant professor in sociology at Bishop's University. Her general research interests include penality, colonialism, grassroots justice, and collaborative methodologies. She's also one of the founding members of Prison Letters, which is a group of students and academics who support prisoners across Canada by responding to information and resource requests. So if anyone out there who's listening to the show has any resource requests, you can check them out. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Vicky.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hi, my name is Jeff Elise Barbara. I'm here to tell you that I'm coming back after 2 years off Montreal's live music scene with brand new songs and a show partly centered around the theme of blackness and the rejection of racialized tropes within white spaces. This event also marks the return of Dishwasher, in addition to sets by local songstress Elena Studley and alternative chill soul act Strange Fruits. Admission is $8 in advance and $10 at the door. Join me and my team of Black Space Mission specialists in this one-time event on Friday, June 3rd at Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint Laurent, 9 p.m., a CKUT and Sony Peril Papaloco presentation.
Le Salon du Livre Anarchiste de Montréal.
The Montreal Anarchist Book Fair, 2 days, Saturday, May 28th and Sunday, May 29th. For info, anarchistbookfair.ca.
Le Salon du Livre Anarchiste se tiendra les 28 et 29 mai dans deux bâtiments du Parc Vinet, une courte distance du métro Lionel Groulx. Pour info, salonanarchiste.ca.
Free and welcome to all. For people curious about anarchism and wanting to learn more, join us at the CEDA and CCGV near Metro Lionel Groulx.
C'est gratuit. Bienvenue à toutes et à tous. Ni Dieu, ni maître, ni patron, ni frontière.
Visit anarchistbookfair.ca for more info. No gods, no masters, no bosses, no borders.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Was a version of the song Dans la prison des Landes by Mes Aïeux. We will end the show today with some news items. Prisoners in the Holman Correctional Institution in Alabama ended their 10-day work strike on May 13th. The strike had spread to four other prisons in Alabama and shut down a license plate factory, a canning plant, fleet services, and a chemical industry. According to supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org, the prisoners' strike stopped an Alabama legislature bill that would have greatly expanded the Alabama prison system. The strike finally ended when scabs were brought in to work the factories. The scabs were actually minimum security prisoners who normally would have been working in work release programs on the outside. Also, according to supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org, on June 10th, 2016, prisoners in Wisconsin are starting a food refusal campaign calling for the abolition of solitary confinement. June 11th is also the Day of Solidarity with Long-Term Anarchist Prisoners, and you can check out our next show for more information about both of those news items.
According to CBC.ca, earlier this month, all of the inmates in an entire block of the Central Nova Correctional Facility filed habeas corpus applications to protest being locked down in their cells. The prisoners stated that their rights were violated after being locked in their cells for quote-unquote reasons unknown. Although the applications did not go forward to a hearing, the lockdown was lifted shortly after the inmates' documents were filed in court. According to Dalhousie legal aid lawyer Claire McNeil, despite the habeas corpus applications not going through to trial, the documents nonetheless give some insight as to the situation at Central Nova, in particular the issue of overcrowding, which is an issue in most Canadian prisons. A court decision which was released in December of last year condemns overcrowding at Central Nova specifically. The time is 11:52, and you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. If you want to check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show, you can go to prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, June 9th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write us at The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thanks for tuning into the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name's Noah.
And my name is Virginia.
And we've been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. The only interest is in how it behaves. You will conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Why do you do Lord's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
Are you enforcing the law?
The law. The law. When they hang my husband...
Consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow. And hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law. When they hang...
Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time complication. There's only one kind. So hush now, child.